Our final case for this morning is United States v. Marty Stacey. Mr. Henderson.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. We now have the benefit of the en banc decision in Gomez to guide the question of whether there was a 404B error in the first place. I think that Gomez makes it clear that at least the procedure was defective here. Gomez requires that the proponent of the evidence establish that it's relevant to some specific purpose other than propensity. That wasn't done. The district court must assess whether do the 403 inquiry. That wasn't done. Really, this was propensity evidence. This was evidence of Mr. Stacey was involved with methamphetamine before, and so he must have joined this conspiracy to manufacture meth.
So maybe you should focus on harmless error.
Thank you, Your Honor.
If we agree that there was not the requisite specificity as to the purpose, you can't just sort of say, oh, you know, intent or something. Why wasn't this harmless, given all of the evidence about Mr. Stacey's involvement with the purchase of the pseudoephedrine and the methamphetamine?
Right. And I think there are a couple of interests that the court has. One is that, of course, this isn't a sufficiency of the evidence challenge. This is whether a jury would have been significantly less persuaded. And the only physical evidence that was introduced into evidence of methamphetamine was these drugs from 2008.
But why is that such a big deal when the jury is heard? The jury's told that he's a smurf, right? He's out there buying these pills when he can, which has become more difficult since the regulatory regime tightened up. But if you've got enough people working on it, I guess you can still obtain a decent number. But there's a lot of testimony about his involvement with procuring this input to the manufacture of methamphetamine. Why, does it really make that much difference if somebody puts a little bag of it on a table?
I guess I don't understand why the government would do that if it didn't feel that that was persuasive evidence. The government
over-tries cases all the time, so maybe they didn't.
Sometimes I think that assistant U.S. attorneys, just in order to keep alert, try to see how many reversible errors they can inject into a case they can't lose. It's a game of some sort.
Right, and that's the thing about this evidence. Now, I suppose my argument is really based on common sense and based on discussions that defense lawyers have. You know, for example, in a child pornography case, you say as soon as they see the child pornography, your guy's convicted, regardless of what it is. I think that it's a less substantial effect when you have physical drugs in front of the jury, but that's persuasive argument. That makes it real for a jury. Imagine other cases, gun cases. If you brought in 404B evidence of a gun that was used in a prior crime unrelated to the current felon in possession crime, I think that would be very persuasive evidence for the jury to conclude, okay, this guy knows guns, this guy must have had a gun at this time. Physical evidence is powerful evidence. The other concern, I suppose, that I have is that this same procedure occurred 3 years ago in this same district court in Moore.
Well, hopefully after Gomez, it's not going to happen again. I mean, the whole point of Gomez, as Judge Easterbrook said earlier, is to try to make it more clear how 404B is supposed to be handled, and the specificity we called for, I hope, is going to help.
Right, and you know, to the extent that actually giving some meat to this is 404B evidence is important evidence. I think that, you know, the harmless error inquiry, when we affirm these types of cases, it takes away some of the importance of keeping out inadmissible evidence.
Although, of course, even Gomez winds up finding that 404B evidence error was harmless.
Right, and obviously it was a closer call than what 404B evidence, whether it's error or not. Realistically, I think the important right that Mr. Stacey exercised in this case was the right to a jury trial, and the right to a trial where a jury could determine guilt or acquittal based on admissible evidence. So I understand that I think harmless error is a close question, but I would suggest that the physical evidence of methamphetamine, when there was no other physical evidence of methamphetamine, is powerful. It brings to mind, I had another trial where the opening and closing arguments were a prosecutor very dramatically throwing boxes of pseudoephedrine at the jury. I mean, that it's powerful evidence, because for a jury, for the lay people, it makes it real. They don't know drugs like the court. The attorneys know drugs. Like we know drugs.
Please, Mr. Henderson.
Well, excuse my impertinence.
There was some methamphetamine residue, though, on the scale recovered from his room, wasn't there?
Yeah.
And the cook of the used pills to make the methamphetamine,
right,
testified against him.
Right.
So,
right.
And some of the Smurfs that he organized to get the pills to take to the cook test?
Sure. And again, it's not about whether there is enough evidence. And I think dissent in Gomez said
there is at least a trace of methamphetamine.
There's a trace. There wasn't a baggie that was displayed to the jury. And the other thing, too, is the district court gave a limiting instruction for the first officer, but the second officer, who actually verified, yes, this is my signature, this is the bag, there is no limiting instruction there. Briefly, I'd just touch on sentencing. I don't think that the standard of review is terribly controversial. It is a reasonableness inquiry. And the way that this sentence worked under the guidelines was because counts 2 through 5 were included, which are lesser offenses involving pseudoephedrine, the guidelines range actually doubled.
I don't know that they're lesser offenses. They're different offenses. I mean, we've had some evolution in this area, given the scourge of methamphetamine. And so now we have other guys. We have 2D1.11. We have, actually, you can maybe they don't blend together as well as one might like, but there are a couple of places where the guidelines are focusing specifically on pseudoephedrine.
That's right.
And it's a pretty harsh sentence.
It is, but Congress has said that methamphetamine is more serious than pseudoephedrine. I think that's reflected in the penalty provisions for under 841B versus 841C. And so, to that extent, we would just suggest that this very harsh sentence was reached without full consideration of those factors, of the factors that the pseudoephedrine was really the driver of the sentence. So
that argument was not made at sentencing, correct?
This
is an appellate argument.
It's an appellate argument as to the reasonableness of the sentence. It may not be a winning argument, but it's an appellate argument, and that's why it's, again, reasonableness, abuse.
And you're
discretion.
Taking the position that it's not plain error because it's after everything's all said and done, and it's just about the final reasonableness. Because if it's procedural, you would have had to raise it to the district court.
Right. Well, it's kind of like the government has the burden of harmless error on 404B. They didn't suggest to the district court that it wasn't harmless error, because that's an appellate argument. The same with the reasonableness of the sentence. It's an appellate argument that this sentence is substantively unreasonable. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal if there are no questions. Thank you.
That's fine. Mr. Norwood.
And may it please the court, my name is George Norwood. Obviously, Gomez was a shot across the bow, and the government's taking on a little water in this case with respect to the 404B. But the harmless error, it's clear that this evidence was harmless. I think Judge Tinder picked up on the point that there was physical evidence. There were scales that were used to weigh methamphetamine found in the defendant's room within his residence. And there was another witness, Jason Banker, who was one of the cooks, who said, I saw the defendant weighing drugs using scales in his room. So I think what's most indicative that the error was harmless was the defendant's own statement. This was a two-day trial. On day two, it was about lunchtime, the district judge was inquiring whether the defendant wanted to testify or exercise his right against self-incrimination. And the defendant said, was equivocating, but one of the things he said was, I took a blood bath yesterday.
Where did you get this statement from? Is this like actually recorded by the court reporter, or did somebody just
yes.
hear him?
It was when the judge was talking to the defendant about whether he wanted to testify. In opening statements, the defense attorney said the defendant will not be testifying. Well, after evidence came in, the defendant wanted to be heard.
So there's a colloquy about whether
he's going to testify, and the defendant says, I took a blood bath yesterday. Well, that's talking about day one of the trial. The 404B evidence wasn't introduced on day one of the trial. It was the pill logs, his girlfriend's testimony, and two other witnesses' testimony. So before the 404B evidence had even been introduced, the defendant's already acknowledging, I took a blood bath based on the evidence. So the evidence is harmless. I think...
Can you think of any actual reason other than propensity after Gomez for this evidence?
Actually, yes, it may not be a winner, but I think there is a good faith argument that could be made, and that is based upon the pill counts. In this case, pseudoephedrine is a legitimate product that anybody can purchase at a pharmacy. In this case, the defendant, during cross-examination of our second witness, Paul Forst, indicated that, well, they talked about the laws about how much pseudoephedrine a person can purchase within a 30-day period. And if a person tries to purchase too much, they can be blocked. And the defendant raised on cross-examination the fact that his client was only blocked one time. And then in closing argument, he also raised the fact with the jury, my client was only blocked one time. That is inferring that my client purchased pseudoephedrine for a legitimate use, that is sinuses, allergies, whatever. And we've had that argument made by other defendants in Southern Illinois. The 2008 evidence, 404B evidence, it was mentioned that part of the evidence was there were pseudoephedrine pills there that were recovered with this group of individuals attempting to make methamphetamine, including the defendant. So the argument could be it went to his knowledge that pseudoephedrine pills, a legitimate product, are made to use manufactured methamphetamine in a clandestine manner.
Boy,
I'm not sure.
We said in Gomez that it's just not enough to intone the word knowledge. You have to explain how it's relevant without any propensity inference. And you've just articulated a propensity inference.
Your Honor, I didn't say a
propensity inference in aid of showing knowledge. And
yes,
Gomez
Your Honor.
Knocks that out.
Your Honor, I understand. I didn't say it was a winning argument. I said it was an argument. I submit, Your Honor, you know, all 404, I shouldn't say all, but nearly all 404B evidence also is propensity evidence. That's the bottom line. Otherwise, we wouldn't introduce it. I mean, it's
so
a fact.
So, no, you don't want to say that, I don't think, Mr. Norwood.
But it has to be relevant.
The theory is that there's some evidence of prior acts that shed light on things other than propensity.
Well, there's prior bad acts, yes, but I'm not going to get into a debate about it. Gomez says what it says.
I suspect that the recording of this argument is about to go viral.
Well, I've been at this too long to be concerned. I mean, if I get, you know, whatever. But the bottom line is...
The bottom line is harmless.
Yes.
And what would you like to say about Mr. Stacy's sentencing argument? It is kind of interesting that the pills, which, as you say, even have a legitimate use if somebody's prone to nasal congestion or whatever, wind up driving this sentence. I don't think there's any doubt about it. And they haven't been manufactured, you know, in their pill form, they aren't even an illegal substance.
Your Honor, the government submits, first of all, the review is for plain error. The government believes this was a legal argument that was made, that the guidelines are flawed, not just simply that the sentence was unreasonable based on the length of time.
But the Supreme Court has said, you know, back when we were dealing with crack and powder much more often than we do now, that a district court judge is entitled to think that the sentence advised by the guidelines is an unreasonable one. And so, as I understand Mr. Stacy's argument, he's conceding that the calculations under the guidelines were all done appropriately. But in this instance, the answer that comes back when you look at the facts that drive it is an unreasonable one. I think that's what he's saying.
I guess first of all, it wasn't raised below to give the district judge a chance to say whether or not it believed the guidelines adequately considered.
Do you think
those
he should
factors.
Have raised it when the guideline calculation was announced?
If the defense wants to raise an argument that somehow this guideline, advisory guideline range, overrepresented his conduct or overrepresented the purposes Congress was intending to remedy, it should have been raised then, yes, Your Honor. But we have a correctly calculated guideline range. We have a sentence at the low end, lower end of that range. Yeah. Not the low end, but the lower end of that range. And to say it's unreasonable, I just think that's a non-starter, especially given this defendant's criminal history, given the 3553A factors, and given that the judge acknowledged those factors. The judge did what this court has told him to do and found a sentence within the range. So I think the sentence is just fine, as well as any error in the 404B is just harmless in this case.
Okay.
And if I artfully spoke earlier, I hope this part of the oral argument goes with it. I didn't mean to imply that the government was trying to use 404B for any improper purpose at all. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you so much, Mr. Norwood. Anything further, Mr. Henderson?
I just wanted to respond to 2 points. Chief Judge Wood, I think you have the argument correct that in this individual case, the sentence is unreasonable. That's the argument. The other issue I take with the government's use of Mr. Stacy's statement during trial is, again, it goes to whether there was evidence sufficient to convict him. And I think every reasonable observer on day one would say, yeah, there's enough evidence there. But the question is about the jury and the effect that the 404B evidence had on the jury. And in light of the very powerful effect that physical evidence has, we would suggest that this is not harmless error for that reason. So unless there are further questions, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. And the court will stand in recess.
Thank you.